Welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin, and this is episode 63. Today, we are wrapping up our off-season series with Dr. A, Steve Alexander. We're going to talk about the Timberwolves, we're going to talk about the Mavs, and we're going to talk about the Celtics. So let's go ahead and get into it. And quickly before I bring Doc in, I just wanted to remind you guys that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, we are talking about the Mavs. We are talking about the Timberwolves. We are talking about the Celtics. And we're doing it with the fantasy legend himself, Dr. A. How are you doing today, Doc?
I'm just over here showing my balls some love.
Love to hear that. That's
I did not expect that Avery to be so invigorating and fascinating, but it was.
It's always fun to do that, but I know I've said this every time that I've talked about this, but had like where what I'm reading has to be on the screen. I can't look at you. If I see you and if I see like a glimmer of like even like a half smile or in my mind, I think that you're smiling, I'm going to just start laughing. And
right, in fourth grade.
Exactly. And that's, I don't know, maybe I'm not mature enough to really know that I should be doing an ad read like this, but it's fun. I'm glad the call to action worked enough that you felt the need to feel free as a dove by showing your balls some love. So
yeah, I definitely got the message.
Well, we will start talking about basketballs as opposed to Manscaped products now. And we are talking about the final three teams, Doc. I know I did this last year as well, getting you on to talk about the Mavs. I know you're a Luka guy. So that's what I was waiting for. And I was expecting it to happen a few episodes before this, but then they made a run to the NBA final. So it was cool that we'll get to wrap up this offseason series with you talking about your guy, Luka. And we will actually start with Dallas. So I'm going to go ahead and just recap their season quickly. They went 50-32, finished fifth in the West, obviously made the NBA finals. Before losing to Boston, they have pick 58 in this draft, so not going to be able to add much there. I've kind of done like an overall just team direction for each team throughout this. They're a contender. Quite obviously, they are a contending team because they were just in the NBA Finals. Can't say that a team that makes the finals isn't a contender, so that's where they're at. Doc, how are you kind of feeling about this Mavs team that I know you've been following closely and that just made it run to the NBA Finals?
Well, I looked kind of stupid last year because I did not think Dallas had enough pieces to be as good as they were. And they were pretty good before the trade that brought in Gafford and PJ Washington. But then they got really good after those guys got there. And they went on that run where they won like 16 out of 18 games, snuck into fifth place in the West. And I really thought they did enough that Luka might get some serious MVP consideration, but I'm not sure it was really ever going to happen for him. But I'll tell you what, I was pretty impressed by Kyrie Irving and his demeanor and his keeping his emotions in check and really being a mature leader of that team. And he missed games, you know, like he always does, but they were almost all because huge Derek McAfee fell on his legs and really, really hurt him, and he couldn't play. But other than that actual real injury he had, he was out there every night doing whatever he could to help Luka. And those two really seemed to become boys. So overall, the season, I was impressed by Jason Kidd. I was impressed by what the Mavericks did. I think there are holes to be filled. I think PJ Washington really didn't show up in the playoffs as much as they needed him to. Derrick Jones Jr., I know a lot of people think they need to hang on to him, but I think they can do a lot better than Derrick Jones Jr. Hanging out in there. I don't think Tim Hardaway is right for this team. I think he's going away. And somebody needs to step up. You're Josh Green, or you bring in, I don't know, DeMar DeRozan or somebody, bring in a free agent.
Yeah, they're a contending team, but it does feel like they're not, I don't know, I wouldn't even call them the favorite in the West next year, maybe not even a top two favorite, even though they made this really fun run. We'll start with Kyrie because you brought him up and mentioned him, and I have some key pieces on these slides. That's not everybody that's important to this team. You already mentioned PJ Washington is another guy, but these are probably the four most fantasy relevant players on their team. PJ Washington's probably a close fifth, but Kyrie, yeah, he played 58 games, averaged 25.6 points, 5 rebounds, 5.2 assists, 1.3 steals, and 3 threes. Really efficient shooting splits, almost part of the 50-40-90 club. So the games played were and continue to be a little bit of an issue. He played 58 games, but you mentioned it seemed to fit really well with him and Luka together when they were on the floor. And I think when he was traded to Dallas, a lot of people were expecting, oh, this is just going to be another situation that Kyrie comes in and messes things up, and then he's going to end up in LA with LeBron. But that hasn't happened. He seems to have really bought in, aside from, I guess, in the NBA finals when every time a reporter got to talk to him, they were asking him about, you know, his relationship with Boston, the issues that he's had. So they're going to pull a few quotes out of him to make it seem like he was hating on the city. But it does seem like some sort of switch has flipped with him, and he just is a much more mature just human being than at times when he was in Brooklyn and playing against Boston, some of the issues that he had there. But when we're talking about the on-the-court stuff, he continues to be a top 10 player in fantasy basketball when he's playing. Is there any sort of concern on your end that, hey, maybe this guy's aging a little bit? You know, he didn't have the best postseason run. He had, you know, a good start to it and then kind of simmered out towards the end. Is there any concern with Kyrie moving forward?
Well, that's the thing. This year was weird. Like usually in years past, even though Kyrie will sit out half the season and be a total pain in the butt, he'll have like three huge games at the end of the year that sway fantasy outcomes. And I know Ryan Knauss had him a couple of years ago, and Kyrie went nuts at the end of the year and ended up beating me when I really didn't think he had a chance. And it was all because Kyrie scored like 55, 19, 46, another. Just kind of went bonkers. I think we were all waiting for that Kyrie to show up in one of these games, and it just never really happened. So I don't think it has anything to do with age. I think he was just maybe trying to be too good of a teammate and trying not to be selfish, or I don't know what it was, but he definitely needs to be more aggressive, I think, with the basketball and, you know, take some pressure off Luka, because Luka doesn't really need to do as much as he does. And also, I think the first question you asked me was about Luka, and I kind of just talked more about the Mavericks in general. But I do have a few thoughts on Luka Doncic. One is I got really tired of the crying after every call this year, after every play, really. And it got so bad that it was even making it hard for like true Luka lovers like me to enjoy it. And I'm just like, just stop, dude. And then I think the whole game 3 debacle in the finals where he fouled out, had some careless fouls, the Mavericks in the middle of a huge comeback, it looked like they were on their way to maybe winning that game, and he gets tossed and it's over. I think that was a good learning lesson for him. And like, all right, dude, you need to go home and reset this thing and, you know, get help with your attitude, because I know you think you got fouled every time, but you can't act like that, because people are not going to stand for it much longer. Yeah. And for the first time in his career, really, I felt like the press turned against him, the media turned against him, and everybody was kind of like, ooh, are the Mavericks any good? Is Luka any good? Is he just another Trae Young? And is he ever going to win a title? All that stuff. I mean, I think he's going to use all that as motivation for next year. So hopefully he comes back strong. I was really proud and impressed of his free throw percentage last year. It was almost, 78, 79? Mm-hmm. And that really improved his fantasy value as well. And he, of course, when he gets hot and gets going and gets that swag going, he's the best player in the league by far. But I think that game three meltdown he had was a good thing in the long run.
Yeah, and hopefully it is something that he will be able to grow from for the next time that they're in the playoffs. Obviously, we're talking about fantasy. The main thing that was just impressive to see was the improved free throw shooting. Like, he was career high in points, career high in assists, tied his career high in steals, new career high for threes per game, almost his second best rebounding season. But yeah, the reason that he was a top five player in fantasy basketball was the improvement with his free throw percentage, 78.6, which was, you know, a couple of percentage points up from his career high. It's something that you've been kind of talking about for years now, just saying, okay, like if he just, like this guy that hits insane step back threes, if he just kind of shoots a little bit better from the free throw line, yeah, pretty easily a top five, like nine cap player, even though he already is kind of making that impact. Do you think that this is okay? Luka has finally figured out how to shoot free throws or improved enough that it's going to stick that kind of percentage, or is this a fluke season? He's going to go back down to 74-73%.
I think the form is the same as it was always. And I really don't think he changed that much. I think he still missed too many free throws and missed them at weird times and clutch times. But I also think that he's always been a better free throw shooter than he is in reality. So my opinion is this 78-ish thing is going to stick. And one day he's going to come out and shock the world and hit like 80 or 85%. Because, I mean, we've seen him get hot and knock like 8 or 9 in a row down, and they all look perfect, and his form is way better than so many people who can't shoot free throws. So I still think it's possible for him to be better.
Yeah, and over the final 2 months of the season, because that's what's pulled up really pretty for me on Basketball Monster on his page, which was 23 games, he shot 81.1% from the free throw line on 7.3 attempts while averaging a 30-point triple-double. So definitely within his, I guess, realm of possibilities, range of outcomes. But you mentioned the moves that they made to bring in some centers, or bring in a center and PJ Washington, the center being Daniel Gafford, but they also did draft Derek Lively. Both guys, a little bit of an improvement over the Dwight Powell era of the starting center alongside Luka Doncic. How do we kind of feel about them having Gafford and Lively moving forward, just two really good lob threats for both Luka and Kyrie to get assists to?
Yeah, I kind of love both of them. Gafford's been, you know, a fantasy darling of analysts for a long time, even though he's ever really lived up to the hype, but he's such a great shot blocker, and he's active, and he rebounds, and he can score, and he's found a home in Dallas, sort of like Kyrie. I think the reason Kyrie was such a good soldier this year is he feels loved for the first time in a long time. You know, they brought him in and paid him what he wanted to be paid and gave him a big role and told him, go out there and do what you do. We all got your back. And I think he really embraced that. And hopefully that will be good for guys like Gafford and Lively as well. Gafford's a great shot blocker. He's a great fan. He just has a great fantasy game. And I think people that drafted him last year were smart. And now he's got a higher profile because people finally got to see a little bit of Dallas on TV. Not it didn't last very long, but Gafford and Lively, I think it's a great tag team to have. I think Lively surpassed all expectations his rookie year. I mean, a lot of us didn't even really know who he was at the start of the season. And I didn't think he was going to make a big impact, but he did. He did make a big impact, and he's a key piece. Just as your graphic shows, he's a key piece. It's going to be important to their future.
Yeah, it is a nice, I guess, it's a luxury to have two guys that are really good shot blockers. One's a little bit younger than the other, that both shoot a high percentage, both can finish these lobs that Luka throws. No matter how Luka throws me over his head behind the back, if he wants to do some Jason Williams sudden passes like that, they'll probably still finish the lob. With Gafford, he shot 78% from the floor in the regular season after the trade, which is pretty unreal. But
was Lively may have been higher than that. I mean, I feel like that dude was 100. Like, he didn't miss in the playoffs.
In the regular season, Lively shot, what is this, 75.2% on twos, 74.7% from the floor. So, yeah, when you're having two guys that are shooting 75 and 78%, that plays pretty well as lob threats for Luka.
Yeah, and the reason they're shooting that well is that's all they did is stay inside where Luka wants them. You know, that was part of the problem with Luka and Kristaps Porzingis. Is Porzingis loved to shoot threes and loved to roam on the outside, and he wasn't really crashing the boards. And he got his share of lobs, but, you know, we saw Derek Lively hit a three-pointer in the playoffs. That didn't really get me excited for next year. I don't think he's going to suddenly start hoisting a bunch of threes and making them. But those two guys love to play at the basket, and Luka likes to give them to him at the basket. And I can see Lively shooting like 85% if he just stays where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, I think my main concern with both of them in fantasy is that they're not only competing with each other for minutes and touches, but also at times, because they're just bigger centers, if Jason Kidd wants to use more of, I guess, a switching lineup on defense, Maxi Kleber was getting a lot of minutes at center as well. So it wasn't like both these guys are playing 24 minutes and it's just a split. It was, I mean, I believe after the trade, Gafford was at about 21 minutes and Lively was at like 18 or 19 because there was Maxi Kleber minutes in there as well. So are you concerned at all, like, if heading into next season when it comes to drafting them, oh, there's three mouths to feed here at center and at least just two guys that kind of do the same thing. So it kind of, I guess, caps both of their upside.
Yeah, I am concerned about that. And it's also hard to get a read on what Jason Kidd wants to do, because he never really seemed to make either one of them the focal center. Like, it was always just sort of, you're always just sort of guessing who was going to get the most playing time that night. And maybe this season, now that they know what they have in Gafford, and now that Lively has a year on his belt, maybe a more consistent pattern will emerge of playing time for those guys. But I don't think we're going to know that until after the draft. So I would tread carefully drafting Gafford and Lively, but I think I'm not really scared to draft either one of them.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's just looking at what the ADP is. Like, is it worth taking a guy that may play 21 to 23 minutes per game in round six? I'm not sure, but like maybe like round eight, I'd feel more comfortable. I guess it'll just kind of depend on where their ADP is at. But I mean, it's two guys that are going to be elite, at least very good to elite shot blockers, and shoot a ridiculously high percentage and then contribute a little bit on the glass. Probably not going to help you much anywhere else, but the traditional center stuff, they'll be able to do. You mentioned also, you know, PJ Washington was the guy they added, Derek Jones on the perimeter. Derek Jones isn't much of a fantasy guy. He's an athletic guy that they had as one of their better perimeter defenders as well, and that was pretty much his role. And then PJ Washington also just supposed to play really good defense, but couldn't really buy a shot at times. Like, he really struggled offensively despite getting some pretty good looks. Is PJ Washington a guy that you're going to look to draft at all next year, or aside from maybe just like a late round step?
Nah, he'd be a late round guy for me, where if I needed a big and some threes. I would consider him sort of like he's been for the rest of his career. Hopefully he plays more consistently next year than he did in these playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. And he's not necessarily a guy I'm looking at. And I think just kind of the overall premise of what Dallas has been, at least the last couple of years, is that Luka's elite in fantasy. And obviously they have Kyrie now. Adding Gafford changes that a little bit, but there's not generally a ton of fantasy depth in Dallas. There's not going to be seven guys that you want rostered, six guys that you want rostered. It's probably five guys that should be, but really it's three to four that are like guaranteed, like must roster if you can, with Luka and Kyrie as the headliners. But that is Dallas. So we will move on to Minnesota, who went 56-26 this year, lost in the conference finals to Dallas after finishing third in the West. They have picks 27 and 37, and this is another contending team, a young contending team that, you know, kind of won their NBA finals by beating Denver in game 7, and then seeing they couldn't refocus for the Dallas series and quickly got down 3-0 and were just overpowered, overmatched. But that could have just been attributed to the emotional high of winning game 7 against the defending champs on the road after this massive comeback. So, Doc, how do you feel about this Minnesota squad?
Well, since you don't have them listed as key pieces, it's interesting that 38-year-old Mike Conley was like the voice of reason and the engine that drove this team, I think, kept everything in check and kept everybody on the same page. And then Naz Reid, who is in the worst spot in the NBA. Like, that guy should be playing, and he's behind Carl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert, neither one of which ever seemed to live up to the hype. So I feel bad for Naz Reid. I wonder what the future holds for Mike Conley, and if he's not there, who runs the point for this team? That's how I feel about those guys. As far as the Wolves in general, I thought it was interesting that they were that good all year and that they were a number one seed in the West contender all year and held it outright at some points. Yet Anthony Edwards was never even in the MVP conversation at all. I thought that was kind of weird. I think Carl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert, Minnesota looked like a genius franchise when they beat Denver with those two. And it's almost like that's the whole reason they had the Twin Towers there, was to kind of contain Jokic and try to beat Denver. And that worked. And then they faced Dallas and just got run over. So the whole time I'm watching Minnesota, all I can think about is, why is Naz Reid not playing? Or things seem to go better when Naz Reid is in there. I don't know, Mike. Carl Anthony Towns is one of the weirder players in fantasy and maybe in the NBA for me. I mean, the skill level is there. The talent is there. The stat categories that he gets are fantasy friendly. And he used to be a number one, you know, a consideration for the number one overall pick. And now I don't even know if I want him on my team.
Yeah, definitely kind of fallen off a cliff fantasy-wise since they added Gobert, and he has dealt with more injuries since then as well. The first year with Gobert obviously didn't go very well, but then this past year went much better. So it does look like it was not as bad of a trade as I think we kind of initially thought. But yeah, you mentioned both Mike Conley and Naz Reid are very important pieces to this team. I don't have them on here, just kind of went with the top four fantasy guys, but I'd say honestly, maybe I should have put Naz Reid over Jaden McDaniels, but Conley is obviously a very old point guard, but you're not going to have many point guards outside of maybe both Tyus and Trey Jones who post the assist turnover ratio that Mike Conley does, where it was 5.9 assists, 1.3 turnovers per game this year as the lead ball handler for Minnesota. I would imagine that if he isn't back, but I think he will be, but Anthony Edwards will probably take a little bit more of a ball handling role, but they will need somebody else to play point guard there. But if Conley's back, should be a pretty solid fantasy option in a handful of categories. But Naz Reid, we are waiting on something to happen. It seemed like maybe he was going to leave in free agency, or maybe that was just us kind of dreaming. That way he could have a starting role. But at some point, I have to imagine that somebody's going to get moved. In my theory, and I guess what I'm kind of hoping happens is that, say things don't work out again for Minnesota next year, maybe they don't even make the conference finals. It's a first or second round exit. All right, we had tried this a few years, didn't work out great. We'll trade Carl Anthony Towns and have Naz Reid be the starting power forward with Gobert at center. Reload like that. In, I think that's kind of what we're waiting for. Either that or Gobert is traded. That way Naz Reid can start. And if he's moved into a starting lineup, I mean, what do we think his ceiling is in fantasy? Because he was 119 this past season per Basketball Monster. Is he a top 100 guy, top 75, maybe even top 50 guy in the scenario where he's a starter?
I think he'd come in somewhere between 75 and 100. And sometimes I think he's better than that, but I mean, he was getting decent minutes off the bench, obviously enough to win the six man award. What if the Wolves traded Carl Anthony Towns? What kind of haul could they get for him? I'm thinking, just because I don't necessarily want to draft him in the first round of my fantasy draft, still has to have pretty solid trade value. And that might be something Minnesota needs to look at, because there's going to be a lot of teams out there that need to make moves. And would even be interested in maybe giving up some youth with high ceiling to get a, you know, veteran like Towns and include him in a three-team trade or something. I don't know, but yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah, I think, I don't know who it would be to, like what team they would trade him to, but if it works out where, say they get, you know, Conley's ready to retire after next season, in that, like, potentially, hypothetically. And then we have them trading Cat to bring in a point guard next to Ant. Somebody that can space the floor, defend, play efficient, kind of like Mike Conley, but maybe do a little bit more scoring. Then maybe a trade like that would make sense for them. And then in that scenario, also Cat, you know, you mentioned a guy that was used to be in consideration for the number one overall pick. Maybe Cat returns to first or at least second round value in fantasy because he's the starting center on a team. Even though, you know, if I'm a GM, I'm, you know, excited by the idea of Carl Anthony Towns, but I think the, you know, outside of him being, you know, a really, really good shooter, a guy that can average 20 and 10 as the primary center, get a block a game, get a steal per game, potentially, he doesn't have like that it factor in my mind that, oh, okay, it's game seven. We need to win this game. Like, Carl Anthony Towns is going to take me home. Like, he just doesn't have that feel to me. And even if it's happened in moments where he's made big plays, but
we talk about, like, Anthony Edwards turned a lot of heads when he turned into the best player in the world for 2 weeks against Denver and Phoenix. And all I could think was, man, that kid has dog in him. Like, he's got serious dog, like killer instinct, take no prisoners. We're going to kill everything in front of us. Like, that was the stuff he was spewing to the media. And I was eating it up. I was like, man, we need this guy in the NBA. And when I think about Carl Anthony Towns, I think of the exact opposite. Like, no dog in him, no killer instinct. I feel like Anthony Edwards is out doing something, I don't even know how to put it, like hanging out with dudes, like going to the club, and Carl Anthony Towns is sitting on a sofa, like filing his fingernails. just two different dudes. And I think Carl Anthony Towns, if he had some of that dog in him, we would see a much different outlook on all of it.
Yeah, because he is an incredibly talented basketball player. Like, the idea of a guy who, I mean, at times in his career, we go back and look at his stats, like he had a 26.5 points, 10.8 rebounds, 4.4 assists, almost a steal, over a block, over three threes, shot over 50% from the floor, like in one season. Like, that idea sounds great. Like, wow, that's an incredibly talented player. That's not far off from, like, Joel Embiid level production. That's MVP level production. But it's that killer instinct. So you're right. I don't know what he would get back in a trade. That's not something that I'm any sort of expert in, with a real life trade value kind of thing, and whether Minnesota would want picks or players and how that would look. But for fantasy purposes, if he is in a scenario where he is, you know, the first or second option offensively and is the unquestioned starting center, I mean, before Gobert was there, he was a first round value every single season of his career. So I have to imagine that he's at least a second rounder, but I think that's something that it's a fun hypothetical. No idea if it would actually happen, but I don't think that he's going to be considerably better in fantasy next season, assuming they're just running things back with him and Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about Ant, because that's fun. Like you mentioned, he had the 2-week stretch where he was pretty much the best player in the NBA, at least in that, I guess, the first two rounds, and at least the most intriguing, most fun to watch. All the media narratives were a ton of fun for him. Played 79 games this year, 25.9 points, 5.5 rebounds, 5.1 assists, 1.3 steals, 2.4 three-pointers. Field goal percentage is, probably what you'd expect, maybe a little bit worse than what you'd expect, 46.1%. And that's probably the main thing that he can clean up that would vault his fantasy value to what the actual impact he makes. Because right now, his past season, he was 37th on Basketball Monster. He wasn't the 37th best player in fantasy basketball this past season. He was going in the first or sometimes the second round of drafts. Just way too early look ahead. Where do you think this guy should be going in drafts next year?
I think he's only going to keep getting better. I think very end of the first or sometime in the second is where he's going to go. I don't think he's going to fall to the third round in most drafts.
We can play a fun game. I can ask you this player or Anthony Edwards, and you tell me which one you would draft. Okay. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Cool. Joel Embiid or Anthony Edwards?
Anthony Edwards.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's
I don't, good I'm point. Not, I'm not messing with Joel's injuries. I'm not doing it. And Philly's never going to win. Philly's never going to win championship because he'll never finish out a season. He came close the year before. I know, but that was a fluke.
Yeah. SGA or Anthony Edwards?
SGA. Not close.
Jokic or Anthony Edwards?
Jokic, not close.
Luka or Anthony Edwards?
Luka, not close.
Do I need to ask Wemby?
No, he's number one pick in every draft.
All right, Tyrese Haliburton or Anthony Edwards?
Well, I'm still in the Haliburton court, but I am a little concerned that he's not as great as we thought he was. But then again, just like my man Luka, which nobody mentions. The dude was legitimately hurt in the playoffs. He was getting injections. He probably shouldn't have even been out there playing. In game three, when he wasn't playing any defense, just letting people run by him. I get it, but he was hurt. And so was Tyrese Haliburton. Has a back problem. He never looked right to me after the All-Star break. But I still think, I think it's why Pascal Siakam re-upped with the Pacers and, a traditionally boring coach, Rick Carlisle, turned the Pacers into a run and gun fun town. And I think it's all because of Tyrese Haliburton and setting that offense to run behind what Tyrese Haliburton does best. So I am still all in on Tyrese Haliburton.
Okay. Giannis or Anthony Edwards?
Oh, now we're getting somewhere because I don't like Giannis's free throws. I don't like Giannis's knees. I think Giannis's knees are going to be jacked up for the rest of his life.
The threes and the knees.
Every year, the threes and the knees. I think I would take Anthony Edwards first, even though I know that's an unpopular point of view and people are going to be like, well, that's just stupid. But, I really don't trust Giannis, and I don't want to mess with a guy that's going to tank my entire team's free throw percentage.
That's entirely fair. I've got a few more that I think may be a little bit difficult, but we'll see. Kevin Durant or Anthony Edwards?
Well, Ant showed that he was Durant's dad during that Phoenix series, and the way Ant was talking smack and laughing and having so much fun and just balling out. I like Durant's fantasy game better, but Durant, I mean, has that huge bald spot on top of his head. I mean, he's getting old. He can't keep going forever. And Ant is just that young tiger. I'm gonna say right now, I'd take Ant on actual draft day in a money league. We'll see who I take. It could be a coin flip.
That's very fair. Jason Tatum or Anthony Edwards?
I'd take Tatum, even though his behavior after the title I found to be annoying. All this mocking,
so corny.
It's just corny and cheesy and kind of awkward. And I'm not gonna. We still have to talk about the Celtics, right?
We do. After we can the, save that for that.
Yeah, we'll save that for that. I'm gonna take Tatum.
Okay. Let's see. Ooh, Chet Holmgren or Anthony Edwards?
Chet.
Okay.
I don't know, man. Yeah, that's think Chet. One. That's going to be close. I think they're going to go right next to each other a lot.
Okay, so right now I think we're looking at Anthony Edwards going around pick 8 or 9 for you. So when you're planning your drafts for next year, hope for that late, like pick 9-ish, so you can get your guy Ant.
Yeah.
Or if you don't want Ant, if you just want to get Luka.
Are you talking about me?
I was saying you specifically.
So me specifically should be hoping that he's there at 9.
If you have pick 9, Ant will be there for you.
Yeah, that's fair. I like that.
Yeah.
I don't want pick 9, though. I want pick 1 or 2.
There we go. I mean, that's very fair. I know you. That would be Wemby or Luka for you.
And I think whoever drafts Wemby this year is going to win their league, and I think next year we're going to be talking about is it fair to have Wembanyama in fantasy leagues?
I've proposed that question a couple times this summer, just saying what people thought about it, just because, or whether it's, yeah, like we just take Wemby out of leagues and just see what happens. If it becomes
we may
too
need
unfair,
to ban but... him.
He's, okay.
I mean, you may have to ban him from fantasy because he's 2 years from now, he's going to be, it's frightening to think about, really.
Unreal. The other guy with Minnesota, because Rudy Gobert, we kind of know what we're getting from him. Like, nothing's going to change there, I don't think. But Jaden McDaniels is a very interesting player to me because the fantasy numbers haven't lined up with the on-court impact from him. And most of that is from his defense. But are you a believer that Jaden McDaniels is still a guy that we should be holding out hope for a little bit and just, hey, this guy is going to continue to develop offensively, be enough of a scorer and get enough defensive stats because those were both kind of down this year. Before this past season, averaged 12.1 points, a block and almost a steal. This past season was 10.5 points, almost a steal. And then just a little over half a block. So I don't know. Are we out on Jaden McDaniels or are we still in?
Well, before I talk about Jaden, I'm not going to let me skip over Rudy Gobert without getting a dig in. Like, what is up with this guy winning 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards? And so half the time I watch him, it looks like he can't play defense. It's just weird, and I don't understand it. And Wembanyama is taking that award every year now, Rudy. So you can go back to licking microphones, bruh. All right, Jaden McDaniels. I think you hit it on the head. He's better in real life than he is in fantasy. And he's an effective, 4th or 5th guy for the Wolves. And he looks good on the court. I mean, I think he could blow up into a fantasy guy at some point in the next year or two. But so far, we haven't really seen it. And it's like the potential's there. The playing time's there. But the numbers haven't really followed. But he's also young. And still learning how to be a starter in the NBA. So he's not on my list of guys I need to go get on draft night, but if he's sitting there very late and I need a player at his position, I'm not opposed to taking him.
Yeah, I still think he has a ton of talent. Hopefully it will turn into consistent fantasy success because he is a really good basketball player and can make plays defensively. So if we can get a little bit more of that out of him, that would be great. But we'll move on to the freaking champions, the Boston Celtics, who went 64-18, were by far the best team in the league all year, and then, you know, finished first in the East and won the NBA Finals. And it never really felt like anybody had a chance. They went 4-1, 4-1, sweep, 4-1. And yeah, they are a contending team. They will continue to be a contending team as long as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are there. And then they also have these other just very good basketball players around them as well. So yeah, it's going to be a while before Boston isn't good again. How do you kind of feel about this Celtics team?
Well, I don't think Brad Stevens gets enough credit for building that and making it all happen. I'm not sure who's better, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. I can't really tell. They're both really good on some nights. Jaylen looks like Batman, and some nights Tatum looks like Batman. But it's hard to really tell. And then the backcourt, Jrue Holiday, I thought really came through so clutch in the playoffs. I thought he should have got some MVP votes, not only for his defense, but also his offense. He was really clutch when they needed a spark, and he was there to give it to him. The fact that Milwaukee let Jrue go to Boston, they are going to regret that forever, I think, in history, because it really weakened Milwaukee. It really weakened their defense, which was, you know, Jrue and Giannis were the only two things holding that together. And now Damian Lillard don't play defense. So as soon as that move was made, I was like, oh man, Boston's the best team in the league now. And I think the only team that really could have challenged them in the playoffs or in the finals would have been probably Denver, and Minnesota somehow beat them and ruined that plan that the NBA had for Boston versus Denver. I had Boston beating Denver in the finals in my, you know, official predictions. I changed up to the Mavs once they got in there at the end, just because I felt like I had to. But yeah, I don't know. Boston's going to be really good for a long time, just like you said.
Yeah, they are. I was in the same, like, or on the same page about the idea that if somebody was going to beat Boston this year, it was going to be Denver. But then that obviously just didn't happen. I was rooting for Minnesota because I wanted to see Anthony Edwards do well. But yeah, it felt like, yeah, okay, like Boston's kind of got this thing wrapped up, and they're, it's going to be a while before anybody can truly kind of contend with this Celtics team. I mean, I guess there will be teams that contend with them. Hopefully it's probably not quite as dominant, or it's not going to look quite as dominant next year. But you mentioned the Jrue Holiday trade. I don't have Jrue Holiday up here. Obviously he's still incredibly important to this team, because Milwaukee had originally traded him to Portland for Dame, and then they swung him to Boston. I just have to imagine that Milwaukee's front office, like when they saw, oh, this, we traded him out west to a bad team, and then he got swung back to the east to who is already the most talented team. I'm sure they just were like, oh crap, what did we do? Like, we just gave Boston the opportunity to get Jrue Holiday. We screwed up. So yeah.
And that's one thing I have about the Celtics is they got Derek White, who's freaking awesome at basketball, and he's a great defender and he's just a huge piece of the puzzle. And then they add Jrue Holiday to that. And now they have the best defensive backcourt in the entire league. And then when I was watching Jaylen Brown play defense against Luka, to me, he's the best Luka defender in the NBA. He's the first person that I've really seen get under Luka's skin and keep Luka from doing exactly what he wants to do. Almost everybody else who tries to do that, you know, we heard all about the torture chamber and all this crap, and it didn't really slow Luka down too much. But Jaylen Brown is a really, really good defender, and Jason Tatum is no slouch. And I mean, the defense they've got in their forwards and their guards is just terrifying. Not to mention all those players are really good offensively too.
Yeah, because I mean, even at his age, Al Horford can switch onto opposing teams' ball handlers better than most other centers in the NBA. And while Porzingis is 7'3" and isn't, you know, necessarily the best at switching onto ball handlers, he's a good shot blocker because he's 7'3" and can move fairly well. So yeah, this team is, with just that six, was by far the most talented team in the league. And then other guys like Peyton Pritchard stepped up and provide them just a little bit more depth. But we'll talk about Tatum, so we can just talk, you know, about him being a good basketball player, but about him being corny, because like you mentioned, and you know, this won't be the entire thing, but I think it's just funny because there was the videos of every celebration he did and then like comparing it to somebody that had already done that. The one that really got me was the post game interview where he like just randomly just goes, "We did it." And then like does the KG yell, but it was like the, "We did it." It was like this moment of realization for him that like, wow, we actually won the championship. I was like, buddy, you guys won by 20 and it was in 5 games. Like, it wasn't like a close thing that you're just now realizing you're winning. Like, you should have known a while ago that, hey, you guys won an NBA championship. So the moment of realization thing was just, it was comedic to me.
Yeah. So I've never been a Tatum guy, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've never drafted him. I've drafted him, but reluctantly. He's always projected as a first round fantasy guy. He's always been labeled the face of the future. He's going to take over the league one day, and he's going to be the best player we've seen. I just don't get all that. I don't see that in him now that we're 5 years or 6 years down the line. Luka's better. Wembanyama is game changing and is going to be the face of the NBA. Anthony Edwards, I think his trajectory seems like he's on a path to higher ground than Tatum is on. I think Tatum's a great player, don't get me wrong. And I think he's a very solid fantasy player, but he's not a guy you can draft with your first pick and have him carry your team to a championship. I'm guessing there have been very few fantasy championships won with Jason Tatum being the best player on your team. So he belongs to me. He's definitely a second round player, not a first round player.
Yeah, no, I don't think most people would be, or like would share that opinion. So it's very interesting, but I don't think it's wrong. Like, he finished 15th this year. He's been kind of just hovering just outside the top 10 for the last few years. His availability is generally a pretty big advantage over some of the other guys that go early, but that wasn't really the case this year. Like, pretty much everybody aside from Joel Embiid was available for a good portion of their games. But you know, when we're talking about the finals, and like just kind of the playoff run in general, like, I think Jason Tatum had an opportunity where everybody was kind of saying, hey, this team is going, or like probably should win the championship, be it like a heavy favorite. So if this is going to be like a legacy defining championship run for Jason Tatum, he has to be elite. He has to be dominant. He has to be clearly the best player in order for this to mean something. Like, if you look at the Warriors championship runs with Kevin Durant, like, people are trying to question those rings out of him because he was on a very talented team, but he was the best player on the team for those runs. That's why he won Finals MVP. And it wasn't like absurdly better than everybody else, but I don't think Tatum was the best player for the Celtics throughout the playoffs and obviously didn't win the awards. So I think it was an opportunity for him, a missed opportunity, but obviously still won a ring. So it is what it is. But for fantasy, you're right, especially on a team as talented as Boston is. I don't have a ton of confidence that, even though it is technically like the consensus idea that Tatum should be drafted in like the middle of the first round, should we be doing that next year? Like, I'm not confident that his numbers are going to be considerably better than they were this year. So you're probably right on that.
Well, this could go either way. He like Luka, is probably going to learn a little something from this offseason. He's got to be looking back and feeling a little bit of like, what happened? I didn't win Eastern Finals MVP and I thought I was the best player there. And then I didn't win Finals MVP and I felt I was the best player in that. Like, why am I not getting these votes? Like, what is happening? And then with all this ridiculous quoting famous speeches or mimicking famous speeches stuff that is just goofy and weird and corny and awkward. Is he at home right now? Like, man, I wonder if I need to start doing things a little bit differently and try to grow my game. So, I mean, I could see him coming back with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about the not winning the MVPs. And I can see him being a little better than I expect him to be. But then again, the Celtics are so good and so deep. Like, I don't know that there's a path for him to be better than he is. So, yeah, I'm not. And I hate to say this, but all the shenanigans and baggage and just watching him walk around with that finals trophy, and not really, I didn't feel like he was sharing it. I felt like he felt like it was his. And he just, the way he was carrying it around all night, I'm just like, I don't really like this guy. So I don't think I'll be drafting Jason Tatum. Let's just hope I don't get picked number 12 in the draft. And because that's where a decision would have to be made.
Well, I'm pretty confident that if you have pick 12, Tatum will go earlier just because he just does go earlier. But I think getting him at 12 would be just fine value. I don't think you'd be happy about it, but I think that would be the point where, hey, if Tatum's still there at 12, it probably got to do this. But I think I don't want to just make it all negative about a guy that just won a ring and is still a very good player and very good in fantasy. So I will say that the idea of, oh, he didn't win these conference finals MVP, didn't win the finals MVP, like, I think it's entirely okay for his mentality to be, well, I did enough and we won a ring, so that's good. And if that's a totally fine mentality. Championships should be what NBA players are striving after, above awards. Like, awards still fair to be important. So if he's totally content with that and just like, hey, I'll do the same thing again next year, maybe be a little bit better, and we'll try and do this thing again. Respect. I mean, that's probably what I would be like if I was in his situation. But hopefully, I think from a fantasy perspective, he will, you know, come in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder and try and, you know, silence some of the questions that maybe arose during their championship run. But we also have Kristaps Porzingis, another talented player that wasn't entirely available throughout their playoff run. Obviously, didn't play nearly as much as we were probably hoping to see him, but it didn't end up mattering all that much. But I believe he underwent surgery earlier today or yesterday. I'm trying to remember when that report came out.
I feel like it's today.
Okay, so he's not playing in the Olympics. The report came out that it will become like he will have surgery in the next few days.
Oh, okay.
So, and he won't be playing for Latvia in the Olympics, but I would assume that he is ready to go again next season. He was 14th according to Basketball Monster this year. Games played have been an issue throughout his career. They weren't an issue in his last season in Washington, but they came back up this year because of injuries, and there was no reason for them to force him to play games. They weren't fighting for playoff positioning. So how do you feel about drafting Porzingis next season?
I don't know, man. He's going to be hurt. Just like everybody was like, oh, man, as soon as they get Porzingis back in the finals, y'all got to watch out. And I was like, dude, he's going to come back for one game and get hurt again. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. And he came out in game one and he was on fire. And he probably was the reason they won game one. And then we didn't really see him again after that. So, and that's just how I feel about Porzingis. I would take a flyer on him in the middle rounds. I think he's going to go before that. He was 14th overall in per game value. He played in 57 games, more than Lauri Markkanen. Same basically as Kyrie Irving and Donovan Mitchell. And here's my thing about Porzingis. Boston has got a player of his caliber sitting there on the shelf, and they're like, oh, well, we'll just play without him tonight, and then if we need him, we'll bring him in as our secret weapon. It's like he's a luxury item for the Boston Celtics. They don't need him. They don't need him. And if they want next year to run old Al Horford out there alongside Porzingis and just alternate nights, like All right, Horford, you're going to go tonight. Kristaps, you're playing tomorrow, and then alternate games the rest of the season so that both of you are healthy for the playoffs. Now, they won't be able to do it quite that way to avoid getting in trouble for load management and all that. But if I was Boston, man, I would be like, hey, Porzingis is only playing in two or three games a week. He's not going to ever have a four-game week. And same with Horford. I mean, like Horford never plays more than three games in a week. And they just have that luxury that they don't need their centers to dominate anyway.
Well, you guys heard it here. If you are betting on games played, Kristaps Porzingis is playing exactly 41 games. Al Horford is playing exactly 41 games. And Boston's going to have both of them healthy in their quest to repeat as champions. Doctor's orders. That's just the way it is. Jaylen Brown, guy who won all the finals and conference finals MVPs, wasn't quite as good in fantasy this year. It felt like, I mean, Tatum's numbers dropped a little bit, but so did Jaylen Brown's. About three less shot attempts per game. So, I mean, that's kind of his main thing. He's not going to wow you with any other numbers. Like some of them are at least solid enough, but most of his value is coming from his points and threes. But he was outside the top, like he was 77th, and that's first time outside the top 75 in years. So is he a guy that, like, where are you taking Jaylen Brown in drafts next year? Is he a fourth or fifth round guy just because of the name value? Or are you kind of looking at the numbers and saying, hey, I think I might wait a little bit longer?
Dude, he's not going to be there when we should be taking him. He's going to be gone. Name value wins out every time. And just watching him in the finals alone, you're like, man, this guy's a good player. I need to get him on my fantasy team next year. You don't realize how mediocre of a fantasy ledger he has. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. So I'm probably not messing with Jaylen. I think he will be gone by the time it's time to take him. And I don't think he's going to fall further than he should. So I'm probably not taking Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, that's fair. I think he is a guy that I tend to end up not having as well just because he goes earlier than when I'm choosing to take him. That's just the way it goes sometimes. Doc, I think we'll close on that. Before I let you go, what can we be on the lookout for you content-wise in the coming days?
Aaron Brewski and I are sports ethosing it up and podcasting basically every day of the week. I think Monday through Saturday is what we've been doing. So that's been fun. I've still got my Tuesday RotoWire podcast. That should go back to Tuesday and Thursday. Cam and I on Thursdays, at some point, but we've taken a little break with the off season. And I'm still piddling around for ESPN and doing odds and ends for them. And I think my risers and fallers column for ESPN is happening again this fall, which that's my favorite thing to write. So, yeah, I got nothing going on and a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, everyone listening, make sure you subscribe to hear more Doc on the Fantasy NBA Today show. Over at Sports Ethos, the RotoWire podcast, and obviously you can follow him on Twitter. I'm sure everybody already is, but at Dr. A on Twitter. Doc, I really appreciate you taking time to join me for this.
All right, man. Thanks for having me, and we'll see you soon.
Definitely, and everyone listening, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.